Blog Talk Radio.
Number 30, Healing Through Dance and Movement with Françoise Netter. This is January 31st, 2011 from Littleton, Colorado. Just a few announcements. If you registered with Blog Talk Radio, you can see and join in the chat. We hold a drawing on the last show of each month, which is tonight, and award a free hour of my intuitive services to one of our listeners who has signed up through my website at www.holisticbeliefs.com. I guarantee we won't abuse your email inbox, and please feel free to email me with comments after the show if you'd like, or posting comments with feedback. I always enjoy being marked as a favorite, and we're always open to suggestions for new shows or other potential guests. Tonight, our guest is intuitive Françoise Netter, who is blessed with gifts in healing through movement. Françoise has been a leading innovator in the field of yoga, dance therapy, and stress management for over 30 years. She has worked with children and adults ranging in age from 5 to 95 in such diverse environments as private corporations, universities, colleges, primary and secondary schools, hospitals, jails, health clubs, conferences, celebrity tennis tournaments, and retreat centers. She has taught at numerous universities, including Stanford, Santa Clara, JFK University, Antioch College, the University of Phoenix, the University of Colorado, and Naropa University. Françoise has trained teachers, therapists, and medical professionals in her field of expertise. She currently conducts graduate credit courses for educators and administrators. Françoise has been featured on television and radio, on several CDs, and in magazine and newspaper articles, including the New York Times, San Francisco Chronicle, the San Jose Mercury News, and Health Club Magazine. She is the author of Movement for the Mind, Dance That Awakens Healing, Inspiration, and Wisdom, and has a regular column in Circles of Seven magazine on actualizing your yoga. So with that, let's go ahead and welcome Françoise to the show. Hi, Françoise.
Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Very good, thank you. I hope you're staying warm. I'm in Houston, and it's going to get very cold here. They're even talking about snow on Friday, so it's a big deal down here. Let's go ahead and start talking about what you're doing. So can you tell me some about your background and how you first got interested in creativity and spirituality?
Well, it's a great question. Actually, I tell people that at the age of 5, I actually had a mission statement. I was a little girl, but I knew at that time in my heart and my soul that my life was about creativity and service, serving through my creativity. And my life actually began to unfold that. So for me, as an adolescent and adult, I would go back through the arts. And creativity, for me, was very much an expression of the arts. And I was going to become a dress designer, an artist, and then I discovered psychotherapy. And back then, I thought, oh, that's the way to help heal the world is to be a therapist. And this continued until about the age of 21. And I was actually in Israel, and I saw my first modern dance company performance. And it was at that time that I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a dancer, which was actually pretty extraordinary because at 21, you don't become a dancer. You quit becoming a dancer. But I went ahead and did that, and I found the field of dance therapy. And I thought that's the perfect marriage of creativity and being able to serve others through therapy. So I actually pursued that. I became what they call now a contemporary dancer and a ballet dancer. I was trained in those fields after the age of 21, and then I became a dance therapist. And I continued interweaving this path of creativity and serving others. And I added one other component. At the age of 16, I began to practice yoga. And for me, because the outer world never seemed to give me the recognition and the accolades that I so desired, I was forced through some very difficult times to look inward. And for me, yoga and meditation also began to interweave in this marriage of creativity and service. So I found myself teaching yoga. I went to India in 1978. I don't know if you've read the book. I'm sure many of your readers have heard of Elizabeth Gilbert, Eat, Pray, Love. I was actually at that particular ashram in 1978 before it was popular. And so I became a yoga teacher as well, and continued to practice my work and slowly began to evolve and create this methodology that I call Movement for the Mind, which is a whole way of integrating the body, the mind, the emotions, and spirit. And as the long introduction said, I've worked in many, many different environments interweaving that. And so this mission that I had when I was five has continued to unfold for me in a very profound way.
Wonderful. So tell us more, what is Movement for the Mind?
Movement for the Mind is a technique, as I said, that I've developed over the past 30 years. And it's evolved out of the principles of modern dance, choreography, dance therapy, and self-awareness techniques such as yoga and guided visualization. And it has five main stages. Do you want me to go ahead and just tell you the actual practice? Okay. So during a session, a participant will first lie on the floor with their eyes closed and take an inventory, which is a technique for clearing the mind and becoming more self-aware and conscious of the breath and the physical body. So that's the first stage. Next, and this whole process is first with the eyes closed, and it doesn't matter if you're in a group or an individual session. Then the next phase is to warm up each part of the body. The third phase, then, is to explore different ways of moving through space. And generally, as I said, they move as individuals, but in some sessions, they also work and interrelate in groups of twos or three. Then in the fourth stage, participants explore a theme through dance. This is the big, unique part of this particular practice, because creatively, then, we focus on all parts of ourselves. Body, mind, psyche, and spirit on one goal. And it's this part of the session that is unique to Movement for the Mind. And then finally, participants express what they've experienced through another medium, such as journaling, drawing, or in a facilitated debriefing session. And this final stage integrates intellectual understanding with the physical experience.
Okay, how is it different or the same as dance in terms of, you talked about modern dance, how would you characterize it, comparing it to that?
Well, that's a great question. In most dance classes, what you do is you have the teacher in front, and then you follow their particular moves, and that doesn't matter if it's hip-hop or ballroom or ballet or modern or tap, it doesn't matter. In this particular form of movement, we use the five choreographic principles, which are time, space, energy, motion, and rhythm. But the whole session is guided to a large part, first with the eyes closed, so it's guided visually. It uses choreographic principles, but I guide it through my words. The session is guided rather than following me. And then it's also, I use music in a very purposeful way. And that is to either have participants work with the music, So it's like a harmonious background effect, or it may actually have them look at the music as something that is a bit interruptive, and just like our outer world. So how it's different is that it's guided rather than following someone. So a person, you may have a session with 50 people in the room, and each person will do different movements, but they'll be guided through my voice and through the music.
Okay, help me a little bit more. How are they doing different movements with different people, and yet they're following you?
They're not following me. They're only listening to my vocal.
Okay, I'm so used to traditional things where somebody's up at the front and they're looking in the mirror, and you're doing what they're doing.
So in other words, all sessions start with the eyes closed. What we do is we work through an inventory, work through breath, so that brings physical awareness. In the second part, they still have their eyes closed, and they learn how to work with the principles of dance, with their time, space, energy, rhythm, and motion. So it becomes very safe for them. For most people, dance is not something that we're accustomed to doing. Now it's become more popular. You have Dancing with the Stars. You have So You Think You Can Dance. And more people are taking ballroom classes. But it's still very much a way of feeling like you have to do something well. And if you don't have the right body, if you don't think you have rhythm, it's very much... we tend to judge ourselves quite a bit. In this particular movement for the mind, there's no self-judgment because you do the whole first part with your eyes closed. So I have people explore each part of their body as if they were brand new, as if they just came to Earth in their body, and they begin to explore each body part individually. So they start to warm up the body. Then in the third phase, once they come up to, they explore the levels, like low level would be very close to the ground, very much aware of the gravity pulling on the body. Middle level is kneeling or sitting, and then there's standing level. And you do all this first part with the eyes closed. We also, in the first part, really work on boundaries, which I will talk about a little bit later, which makes the body safe and which gives us this appropriate sense of our own self-space and how to interact with others. And then in that back into the exploration, we begin to work on exploring our movements in the room. But again, it is individually, each person may explore movements very differently. We work with four directions, forward, backwards, sideways, and turning. So it uses these choreographic principles to create dances, but each person is doing their own thing. So it becomes a very safe process. And then finally, we work with a theme. Does that make more sense?
Yeah. What is this, slow and graceful, or you have a fairly energetic beat-type music? What style, what sort of pace are the people moving to?
Sometimes we work very slowly, but we also work with tempo. So there are times that I'll have people work very, very fast and then experiment with slow and fast. So in other words, what occurs here is that we're using movement as a paradigm for life. For example, let's say you are someone who has been sort of stuck in a particular job or career where you feel you do all left brain work. So everything is very intellectual and you're feeling very stuck in your work. You're not feeling creative. You're not feeling expressive. You're not feeling like you're making enough money. You're just feeling really, really stuck. And you tend to be someone that is very, very methodological. You do everything very linear. You're very, you're slow. And yet you don't want to do this anymore. So in a particular session, I might have you explore very fast movements, very, very curved movements, very free and light movements. So this paradigm of moving differently than you might ever have done will then begin to evoke new ways of moving in your life. That's the extraordinary part of this work, is that people find that in sessions, when they're working, when they're doing these sessions, it begins to bleed over into their life, and they start to transform their movement patterns in life. So that's where the whole paradigm comes. So sometimes we move very slowly, sometimes we move fast, and because each session is guided with a theme, that's what I work into the session.
Okay. Being a man and having been in classes for dance instruction and other types of movement with what I would have to say are a few other men.
Yes.
and men being rather, their feet are kind of grown to the floor to a certain degree.
Left-footed, yes.
Yes, are you successful in getting them, especially with the eyes closed part of it, to start to loosen up and to let themselves go in this?
Yes, and I'm going to give you an example. It actually is, it starts with, the first chapter of the book. I actually used to do this work in corporations, and I would work in a particular program at Stanford University, in an MBA program that was called Personal Creativity in Business. And this was one of the most popular courses in the MBA program, and I was one of the visiting professors, and I would come in to each session, and I would do a dance session. And the room was usually fairly small. We would have anywhere from 40 to 60 MBA students. And in the beginning, there used to be mostly men in the classroom. And this was just part of the class. And extraordinary situations would occur through that. So, and also another time I actually went down to Southern California to work in a Fortune 500 company who had actually engaged in this course. And Michael Ray, who at that time, and he's one of the innovators of this Personal Creativity and Business course, really loved the work and thought nothing of explaining to people, you're going to dance in this class. So at that time, all the executives actually emailed the president of the company, and they said, look, we've heard there's going to be dance, and if there's going to be dance, we don't care if this is a required course for us, we're not going to do it. And the executive had to email these executive packs. The CEO, said, no, don't worry, you're not going to have to dance in front of anyone. And at that time, I was living in Northern California, so I flew down to Los Angeles, and I walked in my business suit and in my pantsuit, and there were about 15 men and women sitting in a row, and there were about 3 women and all the rest from about the age of 30 to 65, men and women, and they were all in 3-piece suits. And I walked in with actually my overnight bag, and I said, how are you all? And they all look at me, and they're just glaring at me. Fine, we have to be here. And I said, look, I heard there were these rumors in the company that y'all might have to dance. And now, I'm so glad that it was just eyes and there weren't knives being thrown at me. And I said, well, do you see my overnight bag over here? And they all look at my bag, and I go, I've actually got tutus, and I've brought them in each one of your sizes. And they all, thank goodness, this broke the ice, and they all started laughing. And so we began our session. And after that, as I said, in the fifth part of the movement session is debriefing. So we were all sitting in a circle, and one of the gentlemen who happened to be the oldest one there looked at me, I'm just gushing, and he said, can we do this every day? How do we repeat this? How do we do this? And so, yes. so many times in the beginning, people, and especially, you know, in our culture, men, are extremely resistant, but they find such a sense of freedom and, most importantly, a way to utilize the session in their life. And that's the really extraordinary part for me, is that merging of the process, which is the movement and getting all the benefits that you get from moving, but there is also this paradigm which allows you to have a purpose for it and then to bring it into your life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. I can almost see some of them, like some of the African tribes, where they're standing in a circle and doing the fantastic leaps up and down with their spears and shields, on a pattern basis. You know, as part of corporate America and getting ready to go out and, in their own way, conquer the enemy.
Well, you know, what's interesting about what you just said is actually what you're saying is what really describes the use of the arts and movement in tribal societies that we stopped doing after the period of the Greeks, because it used to be that the arts were completely interrelated into society. So instead of going out, for example, the Aboriginal tribe, instead of going out and creating war, what they would do is they would express that. So they were able, they would have these dances where they would, like you said, with their spears, so they didn't have to actually go out and have war. There was a place in society to express the shadow, to express the joy, to express the exuberance, to express each part of life. What happened is when the Greeks came in, they did something that I think we have been paying for ever since. They did two things. They began to give a hierarchy to the mind and separated it from the body, to the intellect, and they also separated the performer from the audience. So all of a sudden, being an artist, a dancer, a writer, an orator, a dramatic person, a writer, any of those things, a musician, there was that, and then there was the one who watched. So we began to separate that interrelationship where everyone felt like they were expressing and they were part of the society that was viable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very much that way. And we have unfortunately taken that now in the 21st century to the highest level, where we are so fragmented and our lives are so segmented. Everything is separate. Nothing is integrated. And that is one of the very strong principles that I bring up in this work, is that place of integration that we so desperately need.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. That it just makes me think of other things where we've gotten away from everybody participating and losing themselves in it into, no, we don't do that. We stand up here and watch other people, and the unwritten thing is make fools of themselves. And that is ground into us so much that, a lot of people just hesitate to lose themselves in the moment. And,
exactly.
You see it on raft trips where, once you finally start hitting some rapids and you start getting ice water down the back of your neck and you got your legs clamped around the side of the raft so you don't fall overboard and you're paddling this way and that way, suddenly you can lose yourself and you can hoop and holler. And then when you get to the still water again, then that conservatism creeps back in, and that, I don't want to stand out too much. And then you hit the next rapids, and once again, you lose it. And finally, by the end of the raft trip, everybody's defenses are down and they're fully participating. But it can take a while.
that's, you know, in a session, because we start, you know, I create an environment that's very safe, that is done very quickly. So you take what you just talked about, which is to, in some way, what yoga is about is to lose yourself in the moment, to also be very much present with your breath, which is all part of the movement session, and to learn how to breathe correctly, which most of us, I know it sounds like an oxymoron, but most of us don't know how to breathe, and you know, Western medicine now is finding out how important that is, so that's all part of a movement session too. But here's the part that really defines it uniquely. The first part is that it is an activity that is rooted in the arts. The second part is that it engages the body, and it engages the emotions, and it engages the spirit. The other part that brings it together and why it's called movement for the mind is that each session focuses on a particular theme. That theme could be healing. That theme could be stress management. That theme could be brainstorming, problem solving. It could be having a better relationship with someone. It could be communication. It could be your goals 5 years from now. So each session has a particular goal and theme that's interrelated. So you begin to use the body as the vehicle it was created for, which is wisdom. And we have so moved away from that. We think of wisdom as only being mental or intellectual. And this process allows you that stream of consciousness, which is now beginning to be accepted, you know, by such people as, you know, if you look at the Law of Attraction, have you seen the video and the book by Rhonda Burns? And they talk about that our minds are these creative pieces, and these creative communicating pieces that are constantly reinventing our bodies and our world. Well, conversely, movement for the mind uses movement, dance, the body, in ways to shift the mental and the emotional state. And then when you work all that together, I mean, some really extraordinary things begin to happen. And in fact, I included in the book, and the original publisher really wanted people's experiences, because I've worked with hundreds of thousands of people. And so chapter 7 is people from every walk of life and age, from engineers to artists to musicians to computer programmers to skilled workers, teachers, educators, and it's their experience of how this work has actually transformed their lives. And again, it's that whole point of not only having a great time, movement creates endorphins, creating relaxation, better breathing habits, and you can do it for pure exercise, but then it also has this other component that can actually practically be used to improve and transform your life.
Wonderful. Can you give some specific examples? Do you have one out of your book that would be appropriate?
Of something that's occurred for someone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I can give you lots of examples. I was actually hired by, when I was living in Northern California, the Veterans Hospital in Menlo Park, which was actually nationally renowned for its post-traumatic stress disorder clinic, had read about my book and actually hired me to come in and work with a specific population of women who had served in Desert Storm and in the Middle East. And they had been assaulted in as they were serving, sexually assaulted. And they found, the Veterans Hospital found, that no traditional therapy worked with this population, that medication did not work, verbal therapy, psychotherapy, all the traditional treatment was not working. So they had read about my work with incest survivors and with sexual assault victims, and hired me to work with them. So I went in and I began to work individually and in groups with some of the veterans. And I had been there about a week, and the next week, because I was now part of the staff, I was in the staff meeting, and the head psychiatrist looked at me and said, Françoise, in one session, you've been able to accomplish what we normally take 2 years to do in psychotherapy. And I thought, wow, that's great. I'm so glad to be part of, you know, the team. This is fabulous. The next week I lost my job. So I guess it was a little too fast.
You were a threat, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
Take your dangerous dance out of here.
Take your dangerous dance out of here. It heals people too quickly. And I can give you many, many other examples. There was another time that I was asked to go to Kaiser Permanente and work with breast cancer survivors. And part of, I know that for myself, there are areas in my life, and especially when they're difficult, that all I want to do is avoid them. All I want to do is, especially pain, you just want to take a pill and have it go away. But what I've found in my work with these particular breast cancer survivors is they had divorced a part of their bodies. Some of them had had full mastectomies. Others of them were still in chemo, radiation. And so they were at various stages of healing, but all of them had gone through a considerable amount of pain, and especially with their body image. And so what we worked on is being able to embrace and look at the cancer from a very different perspective. So they all got to first express their pain, their anger through their body, their fears. And then I had them do an exercise where they were able to actually dance, and this is metaphorically, with the cancer, and for every person that was different, and to form a completely different relationship with it. For many of them, it was about disengaging their belief that the cancer was them. So they had to go back to finding who they were before the cancer, and this was all done non-verbally. So I, as I said, because I guide the session, so it's all done non-verbally. It's all done through the body being the vehicle. And after that session, so many women expressed that for the first time, they began to feel like themselves again. They began to feel that they weren't someone who just had breast cancer. The image, their image of themselves came back to the original place. And so there was this enormous emotional healing for many, many of them. And again, this is all described in the book. There are stories in the book about all these experiences that people have had from every walk of life. And what I do is, in the book, as I describe, there is four different ways to use four different themes. One is dance is creativity. So we begin to explore who we are as creative beings. The second is dance is stress management. And that's a whole process of understanding how to, and today how important is that, how to use techniques so that you don't have to carry the stress around on your shoulders or your body or your mind. And, you know, all of us need that 100% today. The third is dance as psychological healing. And again, it through the stories of people, and there are many examples. And then the fourth application is dance as physical healing. And each chapter has an exercise that people can do at home and can also work with a CD with.
Oh, wonderful. I want to take you back to another area because I'm sensitive to it. I've had a number of clients for the healing work I do, as well as just having met a number of people who have confided in me. And this is a group of women who were sexually abused as teenagers, which I see, based on their experiences, as being a particularly mm-hmm. critical area where mm-hmm. it seems like young girls' personalities are very plastic in terms of how they're going to work through their sexuality and present themselves to the world. And being sexually abused in that age range really seems to damage them. It makes it very hard for them to consider intimacy as adults or relationships, mm-hmm. things like that. Have you worked with significant numbers of people in that situation?
Yeah, that was actually the focus of my work for a very, very long time. I did a lot. That's why the Veterans Hospital had actually hired me. So one of the chapters, the one on dance as emotional healing, I had given a workshop at Parents United in San Jose, California, and the workshop was called Patterns Born of Incest. One of the themes that happens with sexual abuse is the body is no longer safe. And this is one of the cornerstones of Movement for the Mind is making the body safe again. So imagine if you are brought up and you live in Harlem or the projects, and many movies have shown, you know, how unsafe this is, and you've got knives and people are being killed, and you've got drug lords, and you know, physically your home is completely unsafe. What happens with sexual abuse is that's internalized. The body is no longer a safe place. The travesty of sexual abuse is the very thing that is our life energy, the kundalini, our sexual energy, gets completely dismantled and confused as something that should be pleasurable is actually painful, and it gets completely convoluted. And so it is one of the greatest travesties is when sexual abuse happens. And believe it or not, the statistics today is that one out of three women and one out of five men is actually sexually abused. And I don't know if you saw this particular show, but there was a show on Oprah where Tyler Perry came on. And he very bravely, he's an actor, a director, a movie producer, and he talked about his experience of being sexually abused. He talked about the same things you said about these teenage women. He found himself avoiding intimacy, and one of the things that occurs for many, I would say 99% of incest survivors, is during the act, in order for the mind to survive, you split from the body. And what that means is there's a disassociation. So one of the main components, whether you've been sexually abused or not, in Movement for the Mind is making the body safe again and reincorporating appropriate boundaries so that violation never can happen again. And that's why it's such an internal process. It's also so deeply spiritual, because many incest survivors feel not only was their body violated, but that many of them will say, my soul was violated. So this is a whole way of reclaiming that sense of self. And there are many, many stories in the book for anyone listening who, you know, this may help them. And there's a specific exercise that, you know, I guide people towards for that healing. And I speak from experience because I myself was sexually abused before I was a teenager and through my teenage years. So A lot of the work that I've pioneered has come through my own recovery and through incorporating that into my work.
So in your own personal experience, you feel that you've become pretty healthy and pretty reintegrated through this?
Yes, and it's been a process of deep work. One of the things that I also incorporate in the work and is in my introduction is that Movement for the Mind is an incorporation of principles of the shadow as well as the secret. And the shadow is about looking at those places that we have put aside, that we don't want to look at, that we find intolerable or we find ugly or bad. And for many survivors of abuse, physical, emotional, you know, sexual, all of it, we feel like some part of us is not good enough, some part of us is bad, some part of us will never be enough. And so in the sessions, I actually have people at times look at their shadow, look at that part of themselves that they have been self-alienated from, and then to reincorporate that in a new way. And Dave, it's extraordinary. When we give expression to those shadowy parts of ourself and we stop burying it under the rug as if it doesn't exist, it changes. Giving expression then allows us to have a choice so that it doesn't have to keep coming up over and over and over again in inappropriate situations. And so Movement for the Mind incorporates that. So to answer you, I've done a lot of deep work. I continue to. It's like the peeling of the onion. That's why I always say this work is spiritual, because it takes you deeper and deeper into the core of who you are, and it releases those elements, those limited thoughts and beliefs of who you're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. That's a wonderful description. Thank you. Another topic that, you know, we want to talk about is your philosophy of integrating the right and the left brain for learning and how you work with that. I'd like to get a little bit deeper into that, because I know that so many people emphasize, it seems, either one or the other, and they don't appear balanced in, I would say, social interactions or just how they get along in society. You know, the characteristics that they have are just too much heavily weighted on one side or the other. So where do you see this integration happening, and how well do you see a balance happening out of this?
Well, you know, a lot of my work in the last few years have been with educators. So, and I have several courses, graduate credit level courses that I teach, Movement for the Mind, Integrating Right and Left Brain Learning. And what I have learned from my educator, from teachers who work with students day in and day out, is that this problem is actually increasing. Specials, the arts, you know, even for elementary kids is now happening, you know, once a week, twice a week. And we have really taken, again, that integrated principle out, and teachers are starting to see that. More and more we're starting to see IEPs, which is the word for special education. And that's because one type of learning is not working. It's not happening in the classroom. And teachers with CSAP and with all these standardized tests are feeling, you know, almost tied to the chair. So what I try to do in my seminars, and especially in Movement for the Mind, is give teachers tools to kinesthetically work with the students. If you look at our first language, all of us, it doesn't matter what country we come from, what our race is, what our gender is, what is our first language? For all of us as babies, what is our first language? How do we communicate with the world?
Just through movement.
Yeah, movement and sound. So what we've done is we've divorced this very basic way of communicating. So what I do is I bring that back in, and I also incorporate the story you were talking about is with tribal communities where people were very integrated, where everybody got to express themselves, and where learning was fun, where life is joyous. So this is a whole way of bringing that integration of right and left brain, and you know, for people who don't, you know, let me be a little bit more specific for people who are listening. You know, the right brain pretty much controls our creative, our more nonverbal part of us, and the left brain is the intellectual, logical, waking state kind of communication. And we've become so one-sided that, you know, you look at our society, you look at, you know, our kiddos, and they're, what are they doing? They're texting all day. I mean, we're even finding that our ability to communicate is getting less and less. It's all becoming triggered in one way. So I think today this is something that is as important as the ecological crises that we have, the financial crises. We have a human crisis, and we have to start realizing that in order to relate better to each other, we've got to first find that balance within ourselves. And so I think it's a key topic that we all need to address, is that principle of integration within ourselves and within our society and within our relationships.
Yeah, I think in our society, I mean, you know, I am an older person. I'm in my 50s, and I think especially in sort of my generation, but even some of the younger people, we're just constantly amazed that we seem to be regressing on the use of a telephone, where we're going back to text rather than talking to people. And even with that, I remember as a kid, our dream was always the Dick Tracy type wrist telephone, so you could see their image as well as hear their voice.
Right.
And now we have our teens and 20s type people who want to go back to strictly texting, and then they're trying to figure out how to use little emoticons and other things and verbiage to try to convey the emotion so they don't accidentally get misinterpreted. And it's just incredible to us because it seems like such a step backwards from interacting with people, from seeing them, from touching them, from talking
exactly.
to them, and that type of thing.
Well, and you know, as I said, it's been really, to use the word a bit of a parody, but it's been really educational working with educators, because they really are the mothers and fathers of our children, and they're laying the ground for our kids to become the future, and they're seeing such problems in learning abilities, in their ability to relate to each other. And so certain progressive schools now, what they're bringing back in is they're bringing back the arts, they're bringing back dance, they're bringing back programs like Movement for the Mind, they're bringing yoga in, they're bringing breathing, and they're also bringing in ways for the kiddos, for the students to do community service. So we actually are bringing these principles from the past into the present condition, because without it, we're really seeing some serious problems. One of my favorite authors, Joseph Campbell. Do you know his work?
Oh, absolutely! I love him.
Yes, I think he left. He was a great social anthropologist. For those of you who don't know him, and he used to say that he did a lot of work with mythology and rituals, and he used to say that the reason our kids, our students, are in gangs And the reason that they are filled with piercings and tattoos is because they represent the two things that each one of us, no matter how old we are, what country we come from, we all yearn for two things. One is a sense of individual, unique self-expression, and two, the sense of belonging, the sense of being part of a greater whole. And this is something that he used to say was so important, that the rituals that we invoke are so important, and that's what our society is almost completely lacking of. So that is what, that's another very important reason to bring these integrative techniques back in, that use the body, that use the mind, that use spiritual awareness and emotional awareness expression, that integrate right and left brain learning. But, you know, and one last thing that I want to say about right and left brain learning is it always baffles me. When I was doing the research for this book, I was looking into brain activity. And it's still, this was, you know, even all the way up to, well, to today's research, we use, us normal folk use between 7 and 9% of the brain. Geniuses use between 9 and 12%. What are we doing with the rest of our brains? It's something I always ask. So if we don't start working on integrating and really expansion rather than just, you know, this technology, you know, which is to me very linear.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also bring up the point, you know, there's researchers such as Bruce Lipton and Candace Pert who really believe that we have a distributed intelligence through our body.
Yes.
And you start thinking about how many people have become couch potatoes and are pretty inactive, and you start saying, well, you know, if you aren't exercising that part of your distributed intelligence, your brain, so to speak, it's kind of like there's no surprise that a lot of people are getting into high-stress modes where it's damaging your health, and partly it's probably because you have some paralysis in your body that reflects not using it, and so it's kind of going dormant and stiff. And
absolutely.
You
know, I use Candace Pert as an example in my book, so I bring in this whole idea of neuroimmunology and how important it is to really bring that when we are emotionally upset, when we talked about, you know, abuse, that it actually starts to produce chemicals. And so Movement for the Mind really addresses that to work with those principles of understanding that your emotions, your mental state affects your body, and your physical state affects your emotional and mental state.
Mm-hmm.
It's all one system.
Hmm.
Well, Dave, I don't know if we'd like to. Should we invite any callers to come in?
Well, absolutely. If we have about 5 minutes left, and if anybody would like to call in with questions or clarifications on these techniques or other related questions, we'd be happy to have them come on. So, well, how can people get a hold of you, and how can they get a copy of the book? And so they wanted to take the next step and invite you out to even teach a class. How would they do that?
There are a couple of different ways. They can go to my website, and I will give that to you. It's www.bodymindwithadynamics.org, and they can go to my website. There are complimentary articles about all of this. They can go to the books page and they can download the book. It's an ebook, or they can download the bundle, which is the CD of the Movement for the Mind, Magic of Movement, along with the book, and it's a great bundle. So all of this is available on my website, www.bodymindynamics.org, and people can email me at fenetter@yahoo.com. And I can also give you a phone number. The book is also available on smashwords.com and Barnes & Noble. Right now, it is an ebook. We should be getting it in a hard copy form within the next year, hopefully much sooner than that. But for right now, it can be downloaded as a PDF. It can be used with Kindle. It should be on Amazon very soon. And shall I give you the phone number as well?
Absolutely, if you're comfortable with that.
It's 303-960-6000. That's 303-960-6000. But I really invite people to go to the website and to browse the website. There's all kinds of articles that I've written on actualizing your yoga and on movement. And there's you can get a sample of the book and see how it relates to you. And I really, I welcome people's questions and how, I can serve them in this way and how this work may be able to work for them. I work in private sessions. I do seminars all over the country. So we'd really love to hear from people.
Oh, that's wonderful. I can see this being used in a lot of different places, especially since I work with engineers a lot in my day job. And a lot of those engineers are fairly rigid, fairly left brain, fairly, in fact, just the neck and back upper stress alone from being on a keyboard and staring at a computer tube all day long. This would have to be a nice way to break up some of those rigidities in their back and how they're probably incorrectly using posture to hold that, and then they ache later, and it's one of those issues too.
Absolutely. That's a very, very important point. It's just very briefly, I'll tell you, when I first became a dance therapist, one of the things we did is we just worked physically with people changing their gait, changing their posture, and their state would change. So, you get both that opening of the chest and the shoulders, and we all, when we sit too long, that really happens. And it really does influence our state.
Well, we're just about out of time, so I sure want to thank you for coming on. Again, for everybody, this is Françoise Netter and the Body Mind Dynamics. Again, visit her website, www.bodymindynamics.org, for more information. And as a reminder, she's going to be back with us in 2 weeks because she's also a gifted intuitive, and she'll be demonstrating some of those skills and also taking calls. And we'll talk to you more later about what her gift is. I want to thank everybody for joining the show tonight. Françoise's contact information is on the show page if you weren't able to write it down. And next week I'll be talking about past lives and providing some starting meditations to access these. Tonight is also the drawing for the free hour of my services. So the winner of that is Kimberly Staffa. And I will be in touch with Kimberly via email so we can arrange the session. And I remind you once again, go to my website, www.holisticbeliefs.com. Sign up for the email. It's a painless process, and that will put you on the list so that you too can be entered in the drawing for future drawings of my services. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I'm enjoying presenting it and having a lot of very wonderful guests. please let your friends know so the energy will build on this and keep spreading the word. So I'm going to let you go. Have a good evening, and we'll join you next week. Take care. Good night.